From 1854 to 1876, an Alabama pastor was known as the sleeping preacher, was known for his ability to make predictions and help the sick while in a sleep state, often sharing them via writings during his convulsions that were always signed X plus Y equals Z. These episodes drove some to call him possessed and led Constantine Blackman Sanders to question his own sanity. This is the mystery of X plus Y equals Z, the sleeping preacher. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. A trance preacher, as they have been known for centuries, is a person who preaches a sermon, addresses an audience, or shares prophecies, visions, while in a trance state, somewhere between awake and asleep. Most historical accounts are connected to a religion. The sleeping preacher, as they're commonly known, has what some view as a gift inspired from God or some higher power. Accounts of sleeping preachers date back to the 16th century, with historical records of men and women possessing this gift that some view as a phenomenon. To others, it's considered a thing that is not from a holy place, a manifestation of evil. Overwhelmingly, accounts of sleeping preachers are connected to churches and pastors from a wide range of denominations. Many who possessed this ability experienced fear and abandonment. They feared what others would think of them. Some were even shunned from their community for evil practices, accused of being demonically possessed while in their sleeping preacher trance. Other trance preachers have been called leaders who possess charismatic gifts, words of inspiration flowing from them as they enter their trance and begin to preach or share prophecies, illuminating visions. The earliest account of trance preaching is found in 16th and 17th century Germany. Reports emerged from England, Switzerland, and France by the early 18th century. Historical accounts have shown similarities between trance preachers at this time. Many were children, and a majority were female children. In all cases, from children to adults, the person would fall back as they entered their trance-like state. They would begin to quote long texts from Scripture, simultaneously terrifying and inspiring those on the streets and in homes who watched this happen, because a majority of those who entered a trance-like preaching state, as it's known, could not write or read, had never read or studied a Bible or a book. They would emerge from their trance confused, with no understanding or memory of what had happened. Professor Archibald Alexander, the founder of Princeton Theological Seminary, penned the first account of a sleeping preacher in the United States. The date of his description, June 1791. He tells of a young girl named Susanna Orendorf, who lived near Sharpsburg, Maryland. Alexander was riding from his home in Virginia to Philadelphia. As he and his party crossed the Blue Ridge at Black's Gap, they came upon a home and asked for a place to rest for the night. The family welcomed the men in, and the next morning, they asked if they could introduce them to a young person who appeared to be experiencing something supernatural. Susanna Orendorf was the daughter of a nearby farmer. Every day at a certain hour, she seemed to fall into what looked like a trance. She would look to be convulsing and then fall down, cease to breathe for a moment. Then Susanna would lay calm and motionless. It said she looked like a corpse while in this state. When she awoke from her trance and the preaching, she would be singing as if it was her body's way of transitioning her back from the supernatural. When Professor Alexander and his party were welcomed into the home of Susanna and her family, they found the young woman reclining on a bed, very pale, and clad in white. Susanna's parents claim the young woman hadn't eaten a thing for 5 or 6 months, had only sipped sweetened water. Susanna was considered to be a miracle of survival and the supernatural by many Methodist preachers. They shared about her in sermons. Some even traveled to see her. At times, the family would have 200 people encamped around their home to stand watch and wait for Susanna to enter her trance and share her words of inspiration. She would often speak of seeing heaven. She would be challenged on her sermons while she was in her trance state. Religious leaders asked her if she had seen recently departed souls from their community and which religious denomination was most approved of in heaven. Susanna never spoke of any religious preference in the heaven that she saw, saying only that in the other world, people are not judged of or by their professions, but the sincerity of their hearts and the goodness of their conduct. By the mid-19th century, there was an emerging Amish sleeping preacher movement in Iowa, with the first sleeping preacher named among the Amish, Noah Troyer. There are a few other accounts of sleeping preachers in America, but one of the most widely publicized cases in the United States was that of Constantine Blackman Sanders, a Presbyterian pastor who began his ministry in Tennessee but would find sanctuary in a small Alabama village called Mooresville. Some knew him by the name Constantine Sanders, others knew him simply as Reverend. But for 22 years, he was also known by the signature on his sermons and prophecies while he was in his trance state. X plus Y equals Z. Mooresville is a charming village situated near the Tennessee River in Limestone County, Alabama. Mooresville's history began in 1805 when the first settlers arrived in the area and set up homesteads on lands occupied by the Chickasaw Indians, who later ceded the land to the federal government. At the time, Limestone County was part of the Alabama Territory. About 4,500 people called the area home. On October 15th of 1818, 62 residents of Mooresville, Alabama, petitioned the Alabama Territorial Legislature for an act of incorporation, which the legislature approved within a month. Alabama would become a state 1 year later, which is why Mooresville villagers refer to their home as the town that's older than the state. Some of the 58 residents that call the village home today are descendants of the original settlers. The entire village of Mooresville is included in the National Register of Historic Places. If you visit Mooresville, stroll the streets of this village, you can imagine what life was like in the days before Alabama was a state. Weathered buildings, historic homes, and history around every turn. The Mooresville Post Office at the corner of Lauderdale and High Streets, the oldest operational post office in the state. The post boxes are numbered 1 through 48, with some families having had the same box for several generations. There are two historic churches in the village. Mooresville Church of Christ, which was built as a meeting house in 1854. When the Civil War came to the area, Union soldiers camped nearby and would often come into the village to search for food, horses, and any supplies they could take with them. Future President James A. Garfield served as a Union general and preacher. He was part of the Union encampment when he received and accepted an invitation to preach at the church in 1863. Another future president, Andrew Johnson, served his tailoring apprenticeship in a house just down the street from that church. And just down the street from the old post office, on Lauderdale Street, stands Mooresville's Old Brick Church. Built in 1839, the church was owned by the Cumberland Presbyterian denomination until it was purchased by Methodists in 1898. Worship services ended here in the 1960s, which led to the United Methodist Church holding a deconsecration service, passing ownership to the town in 1994. A historical marker outside the church makes mention of religious leaders who served as pastors at the Old Brick Church, with one simple line reading, Constantine Blackman Sanders, the X plus Y equals Z preacher. No mention of what that X plus Y equals Z could mean. But it all comes down to trance preaching, to prophecies, and controversy, to Sanders' own fear of what was happening to him when he would fall into what he called his episodes. Awake again, not knowing what had happened. He was afraid there was something evil happening to him that he couldn't control. Possessed this fear for years as the unexplained continued happening to him and around his community. A fear that would, in time, be eased by those who observed him, recorded his accounts and the results of his premonitions, prophecies. His discomfort with it all made it even more believable to those who witnessed it. We know about the early life of Constantine Blackmon Sanders and when his episodes of trance preaching began, thanks to a book published when Sanders was still alive. In 1876, Reverend G.W. Mitchell, who knew Constantine Sanders, considered him a friend, published a book called, and stay with me now, this title is a mouthful, X plus Y equals Z, or The Sleeping Preacher of North Alabama, containing an account of most wonderful, mysterious mental phenomena fully authenticated by living witnesses. As Mitchell wrote in his introduction, the witnesses are men and women of intelligence, some of ripe scholarship, witnesses of unblemished moral character, and many of them of the highest standing for religious integrity. These witnesses were not suborned nor bribed, but gave their testimony openly, without compensation or promise of reward. Mitchell even listed the address of each witness, should any reader wish to seek further information directly from them. Constantine Blackmon Sanders was born in Madison County, Alabama, just north of Huntsville, on July 2, 1831. His parents, James and Rebecca Sanders, enjoyed their large family. Constantine was one of 10 children. But at the age of 6, Constantine experienced an emotional trauma when his father died, leaving his wife, the farm, and little else. Constantine's mother worked hard, but she wasn't able to pay for an education for all of her children. She taught her children as she could at home in between their labor on the farm. Constantine would later say she gave him the greatest education a mother could offer, training him in the ways of honesty, truth, and piety. As a child, Constantine Sanders loved music and was full of cheer, especially when it came to preaching. His mother encouraged his interest in religion, a passion he pursued from an early age. Sanders told his family he planned to be a preacher someday, and he was serious about it. As a little boy, he oversaw funeral sermons for dead chickens and pigs on the family farm. His habit of using every opportunity to preach a sermon led to his family and members of the community fondly referring to him as the preacher. His passion for preaching was confirmed when he was 20 years old and attended a revival meeting. He entered the ministry under the Presbytery of Tennessee in 1852. Sanders could barely read or write at the time, but the determined and dedicated man worked and studied hard. He did face a setback in 1853 when the then 23-year-old was a ministerial student in Elkton, Tennessee. The young man was living in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Allen Harlow when he became ill. Mrs. Harlow kept watch over Sanders after the doctor informed her that the patient was suffering from typhoid fever, the fever that almost killed him. At times, Sanders' fever was so high he experienced convulsions and what appeared to Mrs. Harlow a manifestation of a second personality emerged from Sanders during his convulsions. While nursing Sanders, Mrs. Harlow would watch as his convulsions would come and go, sharing the following account of what she saw when she was interviewed years later by G.W. Mitchell. During this confinement, he was seized with occasional convulsions, affecting at times his whole system, but especially his arms, chest, throat, and tongue. He also complained terribly of his head aching. Often he would exclaim, "It will surely kill me." On one occasion, he said, "My head feels like it has opened." Mrs. Harlow continued, "Taking my hand with his, he lifted my hand to his head, when to my astonishment, I found what appeared to be a separation of the bone, nearly wide enough to bury my little finger, ranging from above his eyes, near the center of his forehead, to the top of his head, and from the top down towards and near to each ear. The opening increased in width as it reached the top of the head. This condition of his head I saw frequently. When the attacks would subside, the openings would nearly close up. Miraculously, Constantine Sanders survived, but he would never be the same. Mrs. Harlow spoke of the change in Sanders after his illness, saying that one day he passed her in the hall and told her there would be a burying in town the next day, but it would not be a member of her family. An hour after this encounter, a man rode into town to request the right to bury a corpse in the local cemetery the next day. Permission was granted, and Mrs. Harlow learned that the death had occurred 12 miles from her home. No one had known of an illness or a recent death before the man rode up to Mrs. Harlow's home. This was the first of Constantine Sanders' unexplained episodes and premonitions. For the next 22 years, Sanders would seemingly be occupied by a force that would identify itself as X plus Y equals Z. He never knew when the trance would come on. In these episodes, he would cease to communicate with those around him, and his passenger, X plus Y equals Z, would serve as his representative to those he wished to communicate with. By 1855, Sanders was licensed to preach. 1 year later, he married Duana White of Madison County. They would have 6 children, and time would prove to Constantine that he made the right choice when he married Duana. As the years passed and his physical and mental pain from convulsions increased, her affection and care never waned. She was a constant, quiet force, watching over her husband and nursing him when he was in the midst of attacks, which can best be described as what we think of when we hear of epileptic seizures, followed by periods of sleep or trances lasting from an hour to weeks. While at a camp meeting at a church in September of 1859, Sanders experienced a particularly violent episode. He was in the midst of preaching to a large crowd when he suddenly seized with a convulsion. He fell to the ground and into his sleep state. Some believed he had died. They did find he was breathing, but unconscious. He did not fully recover consciousness, apart from a few moments of clarity, for many days. Reverend Sanders would later call this one of the most violent, cramping convulsions he experienced. With cramps so severe, witnesses said his head appeared drawn into his face, would be almost reversed. His hands were drawn against his chest or throat, and he was unable to move. His feet and legs were twisted in the opposite direction from their natural position. Breathing was a battle for Reverend Sanders. But once again, he survived, despite his wife's fear that she would lose him. Sanders' mental and physical suffering following the early years of his illness and unexplained convulsions did not deter his desire to preach. He was officially ordained in 1862. Ordained, but living with a fear of what was happening to his body, his mind, and his spirit. Reverend Sanders held pastorates in Tennessee and North Alabama, but his fear of his visitations, as he would call them, left him conflicted. He had been raised to reject spiritualism, taught it was evil, satanic, cult-like, which is why Sanders was left in a state of mental and spiritual anguish when his convulsions continued to be beyond his understanding. The Reverend increasingly suffered from these episodes. They presented in one of two ways. Sanders would enter a sleep state in which he could see events that were transpiring elsewhere with no consideration of time or place. And on other occasions, while in his sleep state, Sanders would write down whatever visions or thoughts he had during the episode. At times, he would write discourses in Greek and Latin, languages he did not know and had not studied. And he would describe events and happenings miles away, even predict events happening days, weeks, or months in the future. Dr. Thaddeus C. Blake shared an account of what happened in his home around 1874. Dr. Blake lived with his wife in Nashville. Mrs. Blake had misplaced a ring that was special to her because it had belonged to a family member. One morning, Dr. Blake told his wife that he planned to write to Reverend Sanders to see if he could locate the ring during one of his episodes. Their family cook was in the room when this was mentioned and immediately looked to the doctor and said he should find the ring under the window. And that is where he located the ring. The next week, Dr. Blake traveled to Madison County to visit Reverend Sanders. As Blake was telling Sanders this story, Sanders interrupted him to finish the story, ending with the ring being found in the window. He then explained that X plus Y equals Z, his passenger, had written down the entire story weeks earlier. Each time Reverend Sanders would transition from his sleep state back to consciousness, he would find paper with words and writings he didn't understand, always signed by what he acknowledged was the spirit or being inside him. His sleeping preacher convulsions would end with his signature, not of the Reverend Constantine Sanders. His papers would always be signed X plus Y equals Z, the voice that manifested itself during Reverend Sanders' trances. Reverend Sanders and the spirit who emerged during his sleep trances were very different. Some describe Sanders and X plus Y equals Z as having completely unique personalities. Reverend Sanders was an ill man who possessed a calm demeanor despite the pain in his head that affected his vision, his balance, and every sense of his being. But his passenger, X plus Y equals Z, was perky, full of energy, commanded knowledge of languages and subjects Constantine Sanders did not understand. And as witnesses noted, X plus Y equals Z didn't seem to particularly like Reverend Sanders, at least not in the beginning. X plus Y equals Z would address Reverend Sanders directly in its writings that poured out during Sanders' trance states, addressing Constantine Sanders as my casket. To this day, we have no explanation of why Sanders' episodes and messages from X plus Y equals Z were signed that way. All we know is that Reverend Sanders had no control over when and where X plus Y equals Z would emerge, as he would fall into another trance-like state. These episodes could happen anywhere, including one that occurred when Sanders was riding a train. He fell into his trance state. He had no paper or pencil with him, so passengers around him watched as this man began to write on his hand with his index finger. Jacqueline Proctor Reeves recounts what happens next in her book, Hidden History of North Alabama. When he had finished, he walked over to another passenger and asked who had sent the letter she was reading. She didn't want to answer the question, but Reverend Sanders said that X plus Y equals Z had written a copy of the letter while she was reading it. He quoted excerpts from the letter, seemingly unaware that it was written on the palm of his hand. On one occasion, Reverend Sanders was in a carriage with several people. Soon after falling into a trance, he asked the carriage driver to stop. He stepped out onto the ground, walked a few feet into the woods, and was approached by a wild fox. To everyone's surprise, he crouched down and began to pet the fox as if it were his pet, as if the fox had been waiting for him to arrive for their encounter. His friends would, in time, grow accustomed to these strange happenings. Some were amused and enjoyed testing his abilities. Others anxiously awaited messages from X plus Y equals Z to see if the message would reveal a truth. Constantine Sanders was never really accustomed or amused by seeing X plus Y equals Z on papers with words that amounted to nonsense. And he was rarely amused when witnesses and friends would tell him of his actions and messages when he was in the midst of his episode. Remember, Sanders would return to consciousness and have no memory of what had happened. It was as if time and time again, time was taken from him, and potentially his mind was being taken from him by X plus Y equals Z. These episodes forced Reverend Sanders into a state of agony. He began to question his ministry. Would people take him seriously? would they say he was possessed, a charlatan? His greatest fear was that people would consider him a fraud or someone seeking some sort of fame. As these trances continued, Sanders went to leadership and then stood before his church members and offered his resignation. But they refused, saying they supported him. They explained they could not understand what was happening to him, but they knew he was a good man. They respected him and knew he was in pain, but they did not believe that evil was coming from Sanders during his episodes. His church didn't believe it, despite others around the community questioning the source of Sanders' episodes. This act of compassion from his church allowed Reverend Sanders to at least reconcile himself to his condition. He may not have viewed X plus Y equals Z as a friend, but he could view his passenger as a companion. Time and time again, the writings from X plus Y equals Z were found to be spiritually devout and theologically sound, not only by Sanders, but by his church leaders. Reverend Sanders' congregation felt so strongly about retaining him as pastor and supporting him, as outsiders called him possessed, that they took an extraordinary step. In 1876, the elders and deacons drafted a resolution affirming their confidence in his integrity, veracity, and piety. Reverend Sanders chose to maintain small pastoral positions in North Alabama and Tennessee. Although resolved to his inner companion, he was cautious when it came to confidants and friends. The Reverend carried a weight of worry that his story, his gift, this passenger, might be made known to the wrong person. As the Reverend traveled to preach at small churches and at revivals in the area, he always held out hope that he could keep X plus Y equals Z a secret. But the passenger preferred to take control of Reverend Sanders whenever it pleased. No warning, and always when a crowd was gathered. Sanders would be talking when all of a sudden his eyelids would fall, his head would droop, he would make a grunting sound two or three times, and then he would fall into his sleep state. His episodes would change from time to time, going from excruciating headaches, chest pains, and difficulty breathing to blood occasionally oozing from his eyes, dripping down his face. In the midst of this physical pain, Sanders was not conscious of what was happening, what was being said, but witnesses would listen as he appeared to be sleeping and revealed a wide range of truths, some known at the time, some revealed later. Here's what Sanders' doctor, W.T. Thatch, shared in his account as a witness of Reverend Sanders' life. While in these sleeps, his thoughts are confined mostly to theology or medicine. And though never having studied medicine, he seems, while in this mental state, to be very conversant with it, using the technical names, giving the properties and uses. He always examines the sick who may happen to be about him when in this state, without coming in contact with the patient, making and writing a diagnosis and prescription. And I can mention a great many who have been relieved by his directions. I have frequently had him give me the exact condition of patients whom he had never seen and who were miles away. His prescriptions frequently contain medicines which cannot be procured in this country, which he makes arrangements to import. Reverend Sanders' gift for medical diagnosis while in his sleep state was noted by a man's sister who had been taking medicine for her lungs. Sanders informed her that the medicine was doing more harm than good, saying to her, "You think your lungs are very much diseased, but your right lung is perfectly sound. Your left has a stoppage of one of the blood vessels. I see its action." He then appealed to his friend, Dr. Thatch, to check the patient. The doctor did so and found that Reverend Sanders' diagnosis was correct. While in the midst of his episodes, Sanders also revealed whereabouts of lost articles and foretold specific deaths, as was the case in 1866. While in the company of Reverend Mitchell and Dr. J.S. Blair, Sanders experienced an episode in which he manifested sympathy, sadness, and extreme distress. Reverend Sanders yelled, "Poor fellow, what a pity." Then he looked to the ground and whispered, "He is gone, gone. He is gone." Witnesses waited a moment and then asked why Sanders had shouted these things while in his convulsive state. Sanders replied that Lieutenant McClure had just died suddenly from an internal hemorrhage near Clarksville, Tennessee. Witnesses later shared this account with Sanders' biographer, G.W. Mitchell. Lieutenant Robert McClure, newly married, had a few days before this gone on a visit to his father near Clarksville, Tennessee. McClure had begun to cough violently, spitting up blood. He died almost immediately. This happened the same day Sanders experienced his episode, over 50 miles away. In 1971, the Huntsville, Alabama Historical Society printed a booklet about the history of some of the most notable people in the area, including the sleeping preacher. They noted that in 1929, Walter Franklin Prince of the Boston Society for Psychic Research analyzed this case of what had occurred with Sanders' prediction of McClure's death. Relying entirely on the Mitchell and Blair accounts, he stressed that there was not any expectation of death for 30-year-old Robert McClure. Prince noted that had death been imminent, McClure most likely would not have visited his family in another town. It should be noted that when the local newspaper printed an announcement of McClure's death, they said he was at the home of Dr. Beaumont, which conflicts with other accounts of the day McClure died. It does make one wonder if he had indeed been at the doctor's home the day he died. Did McClure know something his family did not know? But the ultimate question remains, how did a man McClure didn't know, Constantine Sanders, see a vision of McClure dying, feel pity and pain, literally feel the man dying miles away, and notify those in the room with him that McClure had died? All of this happening before a telegram, any word of McClure's death, had reached his family. As Constantine Sanders transitioned from his X plus Y equals Z state back to consciousness, he would see people awestruck around him, but have no reason why. The Reverend found himself exhausted physically, spiritually, and emotionally. He did find a place of rest, a sanctuary of sorts, in the little village of Mooresville, Alabama. He would preach at the local Cumberland Presbyterian Church, what's now known as the Old Brick Church. He would also preach at area revival services. His dear friend, Dr. Thatch, encouraged Sanders to spend more time in Mooresville because the people in the village were so welcoming and understanding of his episodes. As Catherine Tucker Windham wrote in her book, Alabama, One Big Front Porch, Sanders found sanctuary in Mooresville among friends who admired him and who sheltered him from public ridicule. No one in Mooresville condemned him as an instrument of evil, possessed of the devil, as sometimes happened in other places. Reverend Sanders felt he and his family could be happy in this village. And they were, until a reporter threatened the peace and happiness that Sanders and his family so desperately wanted. On December 1st, 1875, the Nashville Daily American published an article written by a reporter who had heard of the pastor in Mooresville, his episodes, the claims by people who were afraid of him and believed him possessed by an evil passenger, and those who said X plus Y equals Z was a passenger of good, enabling Constantine Sanders to help others by warning them of impending loss, helping treat illness and recover items that had been lost. And as witnesses told Sanders, a way to minister to people who were hurting and needed to hear what he had to say, even if he wasn't conscious of his words during these episodes. The writer called Sanders the sleeping preacher, which is why Constantine Sanders carries that label to this day. It just sort of stuck. The reporter referred to Sanders as a humble pastor who, if he wished, could be a national sensation as a spiritualist. The article was reprinted in two other papers in the country, which broke Constantine Sanders' heart. X plus Y equals Z, his episodes, were no longer known just around Madison and Limestone counties and around part of Tennessee. A larger audience now knew about it. The article did what Sanders had feared. It brought curious souls to his door. Crowds of people who wanted to witness the sleeping preacher of Alabama. That's why his friend, G.W. Mitchell, wrote his X plus Y equals Z sleeping preacher book. It was his effort to support and truly stand up for his friend who was being called evil and being sought out by people who wanted to use his gift of visions for their own financial gain. Constantine Sanders was no sideshow. He wasn't the kind of preacher to take advantage of people's pain. G.W. Mitchell wanted to lay out a written account of what had occurred in the life of Constantine Sanders, complete with 69 witness accounts from people who were of the highest moral character. They were from all over Alabama: Athens, Brownsboro, Decatur, Hazel Green, Huntsville, Madison, Layton, Maysville, Meridianville, and Mooresville. From Tennessee, in Elkton, Lebanon, Salem, Nashville, and Winchester. Even Montgomery, Virginia. 10 of the witnesses were members of the clergy. 6 were doctors. 1 was a member of the Alabama legislature. And 1 was the president of Cumberland University. Published in 1876, the book was written with the blessing of Reverend Sanders. But as is true of so much of Reverend Sanders' life, something strange and unexplained happened within a year of the book being published. After a second printing of the book in 1877, Sanders asked that all the books be recalled. The books that had not been sold were returned to Mooresville, where Constantine Sanders gathered them all, set them on fire, and watched them burn. We have copies today because a few of those books weren't returned to Sanders. In 1981, a man named William Drake added new historical details to the original book, which was then reprinted. One can't help but wonder if Sanders became uncomfortable with the second printing of the book because he didn't want people to think he or any of the witnesses who shared their accounts were making money off of his story. They weren't. Maybe Sanders just felt he'd rather burn them all than have people doubt him or believe rumors about him. Constantine Sanders' passenger, X plus Y equals Z, made itself known in March of 1854. As suddenly as the episodes began for Sanders, word would come from X plus Y equals Z that it would be departing. And it came in the form of a letter addressed to Sanders on February 2nd, 1876. His passenger addressed him directly, announcing he would be leaving soon for an indefinite period. The promise of a departure was said to be due to X plus Y equals Z accepting that Constantine Sanders wished to be free from the burden. Sanders didn't know when his passenger would finally depart, but he prayed the day would come soon. X plus Y equals Z addressed a second letter to Sanders, announcing that it would take leave of its casket on May 5th, 1876. The passenger promised that after time passed, it would return to finish its work. X plus Y equals Z wrote the following to Sanders: "My casket, I now come to address you personally before I depart. You have been to me greatly a submissive servant in suffering, in contempt, in wonder, in reproach, by night and by day, from year to year past. You can never fully see all you have passed in this life until you see the life to come. I have now given you valuable lessons and prevented you from many difficulties and sorrows. With heaven's benediction, I now bid you adieu." And with that farewell, Constantine Sanders was free of X plus Y equals Z. His passenger kept his word and would never return. As G.W. Mitchell shared in his book, there was a bit of a transition back to normal life and existence for Sanders. He most likely worried that this passenger would return, having been a part of him for 22 years, yet felt conflicted and lonely. This thing, this passenger, had been with him for better or worse, for 2 decades. But as the months passed, his headaches and pains in his chest subsided. His whole countenance changed, and his friends noted his cheer seemed to return. For the first time in 22 years, Constantine Sanders went to sleep, and when he woke, he realized he had dreamed for the first time in 22 years. No episode, no passenger, simply dreams and a peaceful night's sleep. Constantine Sanders never experienced another episode. The next 35 years of his life were simple, rather normal, just as he wished them to be. Sanders took his final breath on April 14th, 1911, on Good Friday. He was 80 years old. Constantine Sanders was buried in the town where he died, Stevenson, Alabama. His funeral held on Easter Sunday. Neither his obituary nor his headstone in the graveyard make mention of his passenger. His monument in Stevenson City Cemetery simply notes his name and the dates of his birth and death. It's said that Sanders rarely spoke of his 22 years with X plus Y equals Z, wanting to forget those years that he lived under doubt and fear, despite having full support from the town he loved and his parishioners. It does seem fitting that the stone that bears his name frees Constantine Sanders from the burden of X plus Y equals Z. Maybe his prayer to rest in peace has finally been answered. Within the pages of Mitchell's book, X plus Y equals Z, containing an account of most wonderful, mysterious mental phenomena, fully authenticated by living witnesses, say that 10 times really fast, there are 62 accounts of Sanders' episodes and the revelations and premonitions revealed during those episodes. You can read the book online. You'll find the link to read it, along with more about the sleeping preacher, in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. And if you're ever in Alabama, I highly recommend you make the time to drive to the little village of Mooresville, see the old brick church, walk the streets of the village that Sanders called his sanctuary. It is a very peaceful place. I'll include photos of the old brick church and photos of the town in the show notes for you. I do have to say a big thank you to those of you who are listening via the Radio Public app. I've told you that when you listen, I get paid a few cents per listen, but it adds up over time. This month, your listens on Radio Public have raised over $120 for the podcast. To put it into podcast support terms, that covers the cost of paying for southernmysteries.com for the domain and for web hosting for the entire year. So thank you so much. If you haven't tried out the Radio Public app, please consider supporting Southern Mysteries by downloading it. It's free on iOS and Android. Listen to the podcast there and discover new podcasts as well. And to those who have reached out to ask if I will have merchandise or a Patreon so you can support the show, first, thank you for actually asking that. It's humbling to think anyone would want to support Southern Mysteries. Both are in the works. So make sure you keep listening and that you're following me on social media so you'll know the moment it happens. I'm on Twitter, at Mysteries Pod, and on Facebook, you can search Southern Mysteries Podcast to like the pod page and join the discussion group for the show. You'll find those links along with previous episodes on my now listener-funded website at southernmysteries.com. Thanks for your passion for Southern Mysteries, and thanks for listening. Careful what we're